Good evening. My name is Mike Murley, and welcome to WPKN's Mic Check, coming to you on WPKN every Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Welcome to everyone listening at 89.5 FM on your radio dial. Welcome to everyone streaming live or tuning into our podcast at WPKN.org. Each week on Mic Check, one of our hosts examines global, national, and regional issues and their effect on our local community. And just as the phrase mic check was used to mobilize people to create a human microphone during the Occupy movement and others, this weekly program seeks to amplify our community's many voices and bring them to the airwaves. Mic Check is followed on WPKN at 6 p.m. by another public affairs program, the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Thank you for tuning in. On tonight's episode of Mic Check, I am honored and grateful to be joined by Rakia Adams. Rakia is an assistant school principal in New York City and is the cousin of Mubarak Suleiman, a 19-year-old boy from New Haven whose murder by Connecticut State troopers on January 15th has sparked a movement fighting for justice for his life. Assalamu alaikum, Rakia.
Wa alaikum salam, Mike.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so first off, Rakia, I just want to say I'm so sorry for you and your family's loss. What you and your family have had to go through and experience is something that no family should ever have to go through. And my heart goes out to you all.
Thank you.
And so I first just wanted to, ask you how you first found out about what happened to your cousin, Mubarak, in January.
Yeah, so it was early in the morning. I received a phone call from my sister, I want to say about like 5 o'clock in the morning. And she told me the news that Mubarak had been shot by the police. And it was just all like, it was just too much for me. And I remember just being like almost in a state of shock. And like, we hung up the phone and I think I like called her back. Like, wait, what did you just say? Because I couldn't believe the words that she was saying. They were just too much for me to handle at that moment.
Yeah, I can't imagine experiencing that and kind of getting that news.
Yeah, it was pretty traumatic, to be honest.
And you were in you were in New York City at the time?
Yeah, so we live in New York, and Mubarak just happened in New Haven. So, yeah, we were all in New York, and, you know, immediately we were like, what do we do, you know? Because it was just so, it was a lot. And his mom was also abroad, and so, you know, we were trying to figure out, like, how do we get in contact with Mubarak's mom and our cousins and, you know, our extended family. Everybody was just trying to get together and figure out like what is happening, what was happening, you know. And it took some time to get our bearings, really.
And Rakia.
Yeah.
So one thing that you know, since January, I remember little by little starting to learn about Mubarak as different things were coming out in the local news and seeing social media posts. And I remember actually seeing a post from one of Mubarak's teachers that went that went viral on Facebook, I believe. One of his teachers at Notre Dame. Talking about how amazing of a student he was, and so I was, you know, but it's interesting because I feel like that's so rare that we even get to see any, you know, anything or learn anything generally about the victims when this happens. I mean, there's, I was about to say when something like this happens, but something like this, like, should never happen to anyone. So it's just, I was just wondering if you could talk about Mubarak, if you could share anything, anything you want to share about Mubarak, about who Mubarak was as a person, his personality, yeah. his passions, his dreams, the kind of person he was.
So that was interesting when his teacher posted that. We were all touched by that and moved by it. And it's true. Mubarak really was just such a kind soul. He was such a great, great kid. He loved to play basketball. He was really good at it, and that was like one of his passions. But he also played lacrosse. So he was an athlete. He was an athletic kid who was a good person, kind-hearted. I mean, he had a smile that could light up the room. It was so infectious. Like, even if you were sad and you just looked at his smile, it made you smile, Like, he was just one of those kids that was, always had a very happy disposition about him, very affable. And if you were down, his smile and his spirit almost touched you and uplifted you in a way. So it's true in that, in the news, when these stories come out, those are the pieces that you miss. Like, you don't hear that part, right? About the person. And in this case, it was my little cousin, Mubarak. And yep, he really was that kind soul, a gentle soul, who wanted to please people. He was a bit of a people pleaser and would seek to make you happy, find ways to make you smile. It's like his smile was almost like an inside joke between the two of you, he'd smile and it'd make you smile. So, and I always remember that about Mubarak, just his kind soul and, just wanting to make sure that you were okay and that you were happy. That's it.
Thank you for sharing all that, Rakia.
Yeah.
And he had just started college, correct?
Yes. And it's funny, I was thinking about Mubarak and just the last few times that I had seen him. And I remember I saw him at his sister Marianne's graduation. And I remember telling him, one of the last things I said was oh, you're next. Right. Because his sister was graduating college and I'm like, you're next. The next time we're going to be at a graduation, it should be for your college graduation. And it's so unfortunate that, his life was taken from him, and he never had that opportunity to graduate and go finish school. But I do remember just having that exchange with him and being excited for him. And it's like when you go to another person's graduation, it is a bit of it's kind of especially when you're younger, to see that his sister's a role model, right? It's one day I will be here. And that was one of the last things I just remember saying to him, you're next.
Wow.
Yeah.
And like you said, that was denied to him.
That was denied,
stripped from him, the ability to continue with his college education. He had just started college, and I'm grateful to have been able to have on previously your sister Aisha, and like you mentioned, your cousin Mariam as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember them talking a bit about how Mubarak was studying business.
Mm-hmm.
And he traveled, and so all these different parts of who he was are all so beautiful and like you said, dynamic, and the fact that he was such a kind, gentle soul. And that is what people need to hear and learn about and remember. And, I wanted to ask you because, I converted to Islam on December 27th. And so Mubarak's murder by Connecticut State Police, including Trooper Brian North, happened on January 15th. And so that was less than a month after I took Shahada and converted to Islam. And so I wanted to ask you, Rakia, How mm-hmm. would you say that your faith and Islam has played a part in your navigating
yeah.
this unimaginable loss and injustice?
Yeah, you know, I mean, if it wasn't for Islam, I'm not sure, you know, where our family would be, honestly, dealing with such a tragic loss. You know, this is not something that you expect to happen. You know, it's not something you plan for. But, you know, Islam really teaches us to, like, how to stay grounded, right? And how to keep focused. And know that, you know, Allah's plan, things happen for a reason, and whatever that reason is, we accept it as our fate, right, as our qadr. And that can be a bitter pill to swallow, but, you know, when you have a strong faith and belief in something, it really does help guide you. It helps ground you in those difficult, difficult situations when you're not sure where to turn or what to do and you feel helpless. In moments like that, like when I got the phone call about this tragedy that happened to my cousin, I mean, you feel so small, right, and powerless. You're like, what do you mean? And then Islam always brings it back for you, and you have something to turn to, and that is prayer, you know, and you say prayer, you call on Allah. We believe in the power of Allah. We believe in that. You know, when we're in a time of need, we turn to God for solace, for light, for that relief, right? And we also believe in Islam that with every difficulty comes ease. So, you know, we know that we're in a difficult situation, but by the grace of Allah, by the grace of God, with his mercy and with his blessings on us, that we can get through this and overcome it and do something with it, right? And so that kind of gives you that clear vision that you need in that time, because otherwise it's all a fog and it can be such a haze and you can get so lost in that. But, you know, the religion guided us and it guides us in such a way that, like, it held us together. It holds us together and, like, makes us stronger. And, you know, in the Islamic faith, you pray five times a day. There's no way you can't forget, right? You can't forget that you have this, you know, connection to this world. But it's almost like, and we know that, like, there's a connection to this world and then and the afterlife and the afterworld. And so praying for Mubarak as well also brings us comfort, because we know that, you know, Allah has taken his soul to a better place. And so we pray for him. We pray for his soul to rest in peace. We pray to meet again. So all of those things kind of help us, you know, help us deal with the gravity of the situation and really just, you know, holds it together for us. And then having, you know, other people like you and other people helping along, it just adds to that as well. Just makes it a little bit easier.
Thank you for sharing all of that, Rakia. And
yes,
speaking of what you just said, you know, I've been blown away first and foremost by you and your family, and how you've all been so incredibly strong and courageous in the face of this injustice and in the face of the, the fact that, like, this injustice, you know, happened at the hands of essentially the government, essentially, you know, the most powerful, or who we're told are the most powerful entities in society and in our communities. We're also told that the police are here to protect us, but yeah, so that's, you know, cause you, I mean, you're going up against, and the whole movement, the Justice for Mubarak movement.
Yeah.
And also, you know, I wanted to mention, Kira Ortoliva, who was, best friends with Mubarak, and she sprang to action, immediately, and has been organizing, I know, alongside you all. for justice for Mubarak, and has been doing such an incredible job. And she's been inspiring me a lot with everything she's been doing. And you've all just are such a strong family, like from day one, the first time I saw you all, like I just, yeah, I couldn't put words to it really, but
yeah,
I wanted to say that.
Oh, as well. Thank you. Thank you.
And really quick, I just wanted to say, if you're just joining us, you are listening to WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, independent community radio broadcasting from the campus of the University of Bridgeport, serving Fairfield, New Haven, and Litchfield counties in Connecticut and Suffolk County in New York's Long Island. We stream around the world at WPKN.org, TuneIn Radio, and our app WPKN Live. The name of this program is Mike Check, and I'm Mike Murley, and I'm joined tonight over the phone by Rakia Adams. Rakia is an assistant school principal in New York City and is the cousin of Mubarak Suleiman, a 19-year-old boy from New Haven whose murder by Connecticut State Police on January 15th has sparked a movement fighting for justice for his life. So, Rakia, again, thank you for what you just shared. And I wanted to ask you now, if you could, and I don't know if you, I mean, I'm not sure, you may have. So I guess the first question is, have you connected with other families who have been directly impacted by police violence here in Connecticut? And then the follow-up question is, if you have, what have you been saying to them? And if you haven't, like, what would you say right now to other families that have been impacted by police violence here?
Yeah. So, the outreach has been tremendous. Other families have actually contacted us. We've contacted them about, the police brutality in Connecticut. And, we've been at rallies in New Haven and marching for justice, right? Justice for Mubarak, just black, like for all black lives, right? And how important it is for all of us to, be present and be active and show up and show out to these things. And, if I could say anything to people or families that may not have been impacted by police violence, I would really want to just, hone in on the fact that just because it may not be spotlighted in the news doesn't mean that it isn't happening, right? We're aware that there, is a disproportionate amount of violence and killing of black and brown people by the police. There aren't any really reliable, like, national database tracking on, in particular, like, on how many people with, like, disabilities, for example, or mental health issues, especially of black and brown people who are shot by police each year. There's no real reliable data on that. But there's studies out there that show that it's a substantial amount, right? But putting the public spotlight out there on these matters is so important. Also supporting organizations that, are leading the charge to, have police reform, find ways for police to, have training for de-escalation and, just better policing, period. Like, those are the things that we should be supporting and seeking out or starting on our own, be active and proactive in this movement.
Rakia, you said something a moment ago that I wanted to go back to really quick. You said all black lives matter. Mm-hmm. And that made me think about all the different intersections of Mubarak's lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
Being black, being of an immigrant family.
Mm-hmm.
I know that your family is from Ghana originally.
Yeah.
And also being like you just said a moment ago, Mubarak had mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering if you could talk about those intersections of Mubarak's lived experience.
Yeah, intersectionality of, being black, being male, being African, being Muslim, being, a black male with mental health with a mental health disorder, all of those things confounded are, is the struggle, right? And until our country as a whole recognizes that and sees that there, you know, there's work to be done here, and it starts at a real personal level, because Black and brown men have been criminalized for years, right? So, and we know that, we're aware of it. And then to add to that a Black male with a mental health issue, you know, they're criminalized and immediately deemed, you know, a danger to society. And rather than, you know, having police out there that are trained or having programs that, you know how to properly respond to the needs of our people, is what we're asking for. It's what we need. And when we're aware that there are these types of intersections where kids with all of these issues, or people, men, women with different problems in their lives that could impede, you know, just living a daily life, we need the support. We need, you know, as much training as possible to not immediately target, but to help, you know, not to look at this person as a danger, but as somebody in need of, you know, help in that situation. I think that's really, really important. And that starts with addressing implicit biases. That starts with, of the police, that starts with, you know, understanding what we don't know, right? Understanding that the police are not therapists, right? These people are trained for this like compliant culture, right? It's like if when they go to arrest, if the person that they're going to arrest is not compliant, they immediately move to like lethal force. And it's like, that should never be the case. But yet it always seems to be the case. And in particular, when the person happens to be, you know, a minority or a Black or brown person, male in particular. So there's a lot that needs to be, you know, undressed, uncovered, acknowledged. And then how do we move forward with that? And it's not going to happen overnight. It takes a lot of work. It takes, you know, from the very top, right? Like understanding that there's reform that needs to happen. And, you know, that's why platforms like this are so important, keeping the story out there, like talking about this and pushing for real change. Like that's what we need here.
Rakia, we just have a few minutes left, so I just have three more quick questions for you. Mm-hmm. So first, what does justice for Mubarak mean to you?
Well, first and foremost, it's actually the fact that Brian North is still employed as a police officer is just a nightmare to me. And real justice means that, you know, that Brian North is brought to justice when he is arrested and put in jail for killing, murdering an innocent young Black boy's life. You know, he took his life, he stole his life from him. So for me, the real justice would be seeing Brian North in jail. And then also, justice for Mubarak to me would be to start to see change in the policing of people with mental health issues. Like I'd like to see programs put in place where there are things for people with mental health, where police are not, you know, jumping to, you know, cause physical harm to people who are, you know, experiencing an episode, but actually getting them the help that they need. That's real justice, because that's going to affect so many other people as well, right? So it's Mubarak, but the whole community, you know, the whole Black community, the whole Black and brown community that needs that support, and that's missing right now. There's a lack of that, and that's what's so exhausting and so frustrating. And until we can, you know, rest assured that real change is happening and real, you know, real programs are being implemented for, you know, people with disabilities or mental health, and the police until then, that's real justice for me.
And Rakia, what are some ways our listeners can support your family and the Justice for Mubarak movement?
Yeah. So we have an Instagram, and it's Justice for Mubarak that you can follow that on Instagram. There are protests as of right now. There's nothing coming up. But if you follow us on Instagram, you can see when our next, you know, protest will be and where, you know, come out to those. That's really important for us, for people to really show up and, you know, be as loud as you can and help us, you know, really push for Brian North to be put to jail and, like, not actually still working as a police officer, getting paid like that. So, like, we need people to come out and support. So if you follow us again on that, Justice for Mubarak on Instagram, that's really one with, like, the best way to stay involved in what's happening with us and help support us.
And I know for anyone who might not be on Instagram but is on Facebook, I know there's a Justice for Mubarak Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to ask you, Rakia, as well, if you could talk to Mubarak right now, what would you say to him?
I would tell him that he's part of something really big. I would say that, you know, Mubarak, you wouldn't believe it, but, you know, what the tragedy that's happened to you has, along with other unfortunate and, you know, losses, has sparked a major movement, and that, like, you didn't die in vain. You know, there's people out there every day protesting for you. There are people out there that are saying your name and that, you know, we haven't forgotten about you. We're fighting for you, and we're fighting for other people to make real change. You know, I was in Washington, D.C. this summer at the Black Lives Matter Boulevard, and at the end of it, there's, like, this, like, a mural or, like, a collage of all those, like, different people who have been slain by police, and Mubarak's picture was there. And I didn't know that anybody from my family I had with, so someone that I don't even know put Mubarak's picture up there, and that was so powerful for me. So just to let him know that he didn't die in vain, and that there are people that he doesn't even know. He's touched the lives of so many people that he didn't even know, and that, you know, and they're fighting for him to make real systemic changes where, you know, and where police are actually being held accountable for what they do and thinking before they act, really. So that's what I'd say to Mubarak if I could talk to him today.
Wow. Thank you for sharing all that, Rakia.
And thank you. Thank you.
So I wish we had more time.
I know.
But Rakia Adams, assistant school principal in New York City and cousin of Mubarak Sulaiman, whose murder at the hands of Connecticut State Trooper Brian North in January has ignited a movement for justice. Thank you so much for being on Mic Check tonight, and thank you so much for everything that you've shared about your cousin Mubarak. My heart continues to break for you and your family, and I will never stop fighting for justice for Mubarak. I hope you can come back on the show sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Mike.
Thank you so much. Hope you have a great night.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
This has been Mike Check, and I'm Mike Murley. Be sure to tune in next Sunday night at 5:30 for another episode. Next up, we have the Ralph Nader Radio Hour right here on WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport.